This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit ebay.com for terms.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
The Volume.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
And we are back. Last podcast for the month of July. I can't believe it's almost the end of July already. Where's the summer? Between Kevin Durant and boxing, like the summer's just evaporated on me. But we are at the end of July. Good fight still ahead of us, though. Danny Garcia fighting this weekend. You've got Virgil Ortiz back next weekend. Then a little bit further down the line, Anthony Joshua had a huge heavyweight matchup against Alexander Usyk. My guest this week, Keith Idek, he probably thinks I'm going to talk right off the bat about the flirtation that we saw this week between Jermall Charlo and Demetrius Andrade. But Keith, I promise, no discussion of Andrade Charlo. I have exercised that from my mind, and I am not going to get invested, especially since I texted someone that would know something about it who said there's nothing to it. So I'm leaving that alone.
One thing I would say is that I was told that after Demetrius Andrade parted ways with Matchroom, Al Haymon was among the people that his people spoke to. So there was some sort of opportunity there for him to join PC. I don't know how close they came exactly, but he wound up signing with Demetrius Salida. And it seems like he wants to fight Chris Eubank. But if there was ever an opportunity for the fight that you've wanted to see your whole life, Chris Mannix, I think it's gone.
Don't tease me with that Demetrius Andrade talk to PBC stuff, Keith. I'm not prepared for that. I'm just not. He's not going to get Chris Eubank, by the way. Like, I don't know if Chris Eubank, Conor Benn comes together. I know they're hopeful they can find a way to make a deal over in the UK. But in the event that Chris Eubank does not face Conor Benn, he ain't fighting Demetrius Andrade. That's just not happening. So
it would be
an Andrade Charlo.
It would be a good fight for Demetrius Andrade at this point, based on what his options are, because he would make good money to go over there to fight Eubank. But, and the other thing before we move on to what we're actually supposed to talk about, I know Eubank Conor Benn is a huge fight in the UK for obvious reasons. That's a pretty tall order for Conor Benn, who's a welterweight moving up to, I know they'll fight at a catchweight and everything, but Chris Eubank is much bigger than him.
I agree. And this wasn't on my list of things to talk about because it's not a fight that's been made yet, and they still seem to have some obstacles to overcome. But, Eddie Hearn, I was reading Boxing Scene this week, and Eddie Hearn had some comments he made over in the UK about how this is not a cash-out fight for Conor Benn. Sure feels like it, Keith, because Conor Benn, at 147, has yet to face a real puncher up until this point in his career. So the next move for him is to go to 156 and fight a guy who can punch? I don't really understand the logic, other than that there is gobs of money in it for both these fighters if they get into the ring.
Only explanation, Chris, is that there are gobs of money in it because it's a dangerous fight for him, as you said. The interesting thing, too, as it relates to Conor Benn, is it looked like he had shown some progress, right? Like, he's getting better. He hasn't fought elite-level welterweights or anything, and it would be tough to get someone to come over there. You know, like someone like Keith Thurman has been mentioned is not going to go over there at Conor Benn's and just go lose to Conor Benn. And I'm not saying Thurman would lose to Conor Benn at this point, but he hasn't beaten an elite welterweight, but he's getting better. And there just must be so much money involved in it that he can't turn it down, because it's an odd thing to do, honestly, based on what his career trajectory has been so far.
Yeah. You know, I've talked about Keith Thurman and Conor Benn a little bit on previous podcasts. Now, Keith Thurman, and we'll get into this, Keith Thurman may have options later this year if for some reason the Errol Spence-Terrence Crawford fight falls apart. But if I'm Keith Thurman, and if that's not on the table for me, I'd go to the UK and fight Conor Benn. Because, again, Conor Benn, while he's very strong and can punch, has not faced a puncher. And Keith Thurman, at least he used to be a puncher, and still has some power in those hands. That's a winnable fight for Keith Thurman, and one that he would make a lot of money to go over there and fight. So if I'm Keith Thurman, who has been doing some belly aching about not being active enough, if I'm Keith Thurman, unless I'm sure I'm going to get a Spence or a Crawford, I wouldn't dismiss that Conor Benn fight as quickly as it seems they're dismissing it.
Yeah, I think you're right, Chris. But as you said, he's going to wait out to see what happens here with these Spence-Crawford negotiations and then go from there.
Yeah, that's and I get it. I get it. That's a bigger fight, domestic fight for him. If those two wind up fighting, it could be 2023 before we see Keith Thurman back in the ring, which would be disappointing. All right, let's move on to a fight we got this weekend. Danny Garcia, the former junior welterweight champion, the former welterweight champion, he is making his debut at 154 pounds when he takes on Jose Benavidez Jr. Garcia has been off since December of 2020, when he faced and lost to Errol Spence Jr. About 20 months have passed since we've seen Danny Garcia in the ring, and now he's back, and he's doing it at a new weight class. Danny Garcia says he's doing it to become a three-division world champion. Keith, do you like Danny Garcia's chances of becoming a three-division world champion?
Chris, I think we'll have a much better idea of this after Saturday night, because you know, the thing that's been mentioned the most since Danny Garcia's plans to move up to 154 pounds have been made public are that the obvious that he was a small welterweight. He wasn't, you know, he won some fights by knockout at welterweight, but he wasn't considered a huge, huge puncher at welterweight like he was at junior welterweight. But he was a small welterweight. So moving up to 154 pounds, while it's more comfortable for him, because as you know, he's 34 years old now, so he's having more difficulty shrinking himself down to 147 pounds over the last couple of years than he had before. Just because you're making the weight more comfortably doesn't necessarily mean it's where you belong. It's where you can fight at this point, but whether it's where he belongs, I think we'll have to wait to see how he does on Saturday night to really have the answer to that question, Chris, because one thing I would say going into this fight, Jose Benavidez Jr., and rightfully so to some extent, is being judged solely on his, what you could only describe as a poor performance against Francisco Torres back in November. He did not look good in that fight at all. He didn't look like he was in the best of shape. He had lost somewhere around 80 pounds to get down to the middleweight limit for that fight. And he's not really a middleweight. He considers himself a junior middleweight at this point, because he too is now 30 years old and doesn't think that he can really get down to the welterweight limit anymore. And why would he? Because he's already lost to Crawford. He's not going to get Errol Spence or anything like that. So he's best suited for 154. Now, he's bigger than Danny Garcia. The one thing I would say too, Chris, I noticed today a little bit at the press conference that Jose Benavidez Jr. is listed at 6 feet tall. And I don't dispute that he is. He probably is somewhere around 6 feet tall. But Danny Garcia is only 5'8", and he didn't look that much shorter than Benavidez. He's shorter, but he didn't look 4 inches shorter. And I thought the size difference was going to be much more noticeable than when they stood face to face today. Now, Danny Garcia was tilting his head up a little bit, maybe, which made it somewhat deceptive. But he's maybe not as small as people think going into this fight in comparison to Benavidez. But Benavidez is better at, look, the shooting took a lot out of him, right? His leg is never going to be at full use for him for the rest of his career. But he's better than he looked against Francisco Torres. That was his first fight in over 3 years. He hadn't fought since Terrence Crawford stopped him in the 12th round in October 2018. And what was not an easy fight for Crawford. He was ahead comfortably on the scorecards, but Crawford himself will tell you that Benavidez's size and length gave him some trouble in that fight. So I think, I'm not saying Benavidez is going to win on Saturday, but I don't think this is, by any stretch of the imagination, easy fight for Danny Garcia.
No, I don't think it's an easy fight either. And I think you're right. How Garcia looks in this fight will tell us a lot. It's not just, to me anyway, it's not just about Garcia winning. I think he's got to win convincingly, whether that's a knockout or a lopsided decision, to make me believe that Garcia has a chance against someone like Jermell Charlo. That's what we're talking about, right? I mean, you've probably heard the same thing I have out of people around PBC that, look, they'd love to make Charlo versus Danny Garcia at some point next year. That's a fight that's makeable in the PBC universe and one that's marketable to boxing fans nationwide. If for some reason Garcia struggles with Benavidez, who's not, despite his size, is not a full-fledged junior middleweight, versus Jermell Charlo, who's been a junior middleweight for a long time, is the undisputed champion at 154 right now. If he struggles with him, if I'm Danny Garcia, I'd go back down. I'd look for opportunities there because, quite frankly, Keith, there are other opportunities for Danny Garcia at 147. It's not like the cupboard is bare. I mean, there's still interest in a rematch between Keith Thurman and Danny Garcia, which was a razor-thin fight several years ago. We don't know what's going to happen, as we said at the top of this, with Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence. It's possible Crawford, who's a free agent, could wind up looking for a different dance partner, and Danny Garcia could emerge in that mix as well. You know, the younger guys, I doubt we'll see Danny Garcia against Boutenis or Virgil Ortiz, but those are options as well. I just think if it looks like the weight and the size of 154 is too much, Danny should not go into that Charlo fight because that could be career ending. You know, if Jermell Charlo beats you up, that could be career ending for you.
You know, Chris, I'm not really sure that I want to, no matter what happens against Jose Benavidez, unless he blew Benavidez out in some way, which I don't foresee happening. But I'm not sure that I want to see Danny Garcia fight Jermell Charlo anyway. As you said, it's a marketable fight because they're both well-known PBC fighters. You know, it's a higher profile fight than some of the other title defenses available to Jermell Charlo at 154 pounds. But I don't know. I mean, Charlo just seems too big and too strong for Danny Garcia. I'm not sure that I would want to see that. But when I interviewed Danny Garcia a couple of weeks ago, Chris, he said a couple of interesting things to me. He did mention the Thurman rematch, which at 54 would be two welterweights moving up to 54. So they'd kind of be on even. And I don't think Thurman I don't think he's taller than Danny Garcia at all. Or, you know, doesn't really have any kind of size advantage. So they would be evenly matched, I would think, at 54. So I would be fine with that. And that's also a marketable fight. As you said, Danny Garcia barely lost a split decision to Keith Thurman. They were both undefeated welterweight champions at the time. So I think there would be some interest in that type of fight if they can't get the types of fights that they want moving forward. He mentioned a fight against Arislandi Lara, meaning Garcia mentioned a fight against Arislandi Lara. I don't know what the public interest is in that exactly. And of course, Lara is fighting at 160 right now. Charlo also will have to, you know, besides all of what I just said, Charlo has so many mandatories that he's going to have to make if he wants to maintain, you know, if he wants to keep the four titles. One, it costs a lot of money in sanctioning fees. Two, at least one of them, his IBF mandatory defense against Bakram Martirdaliev or whatever his name is. Who's really going to correct us if it's incorrect, right? At the same time, no one wants to see that. He is the mandatory for the IBF. He's 20-0 with 15 knockouts. I've seen him fight on several undercards. I'm sure he's a nice person. He has absolutely zero chance in my opinion, to beat Jermell Charlo. He did win an eliminator, and he has been the mandatory for quite some time. He's taken step aside fees several times for Jermell Charlo to twice fight Brian Castaño in title unification fights. And it looks like that will happen again here when he makes his mandated defense of the WBO title against Tim Tszyu. So Mirtadaliev has waited a long time for the opportunity. So maybe he will get it, or Charlo will just say, look, I'm going to be a, 40-1 favorite against this guy. I'm just going to give up the IBF belt, because I don't think Jermell Charlo, having become the undisputed 154-pound champion, I don't think he's looked at as a devalued product if he doesn't technically own all four titles, yet stays in that division, because he can fight Tszyu and he can fight Sebastian Fundora, and there would be interest in that fight. So those are the types of fights I see maybe coming together for Charlo next. So I don't know that Danny Garcia, even if he wins on Saturday, would be in position to fight Charlo any sooner than, I don't know, the end of next year. But your point is well taken, Chris, because I'm not sold on him as a 154 pounder.
Yeah, a lot of big guys at 154, from Charlo to Fundora, Tim Tszyu. I mean, this is a big weight class for Danny Garcia to be stepping in. A Keith Thurman rematch makes a lot of sense, whatever weight class it may be in. And I agree with you on Charlo. Like, once you become the undisputed champion, there's the feather in your cap. It makes no sense to fight uninteresting fights just to defend your titles, and while you're doing it, fork over an ungodly amount of money to these sanctioning bodies for the right to defend their titles. If I'm Jermell Charlo, I'd just pick one. Like, whatever belt he likes the most, whatever sanctioning body he respects the most, maybe it's the WBC because he and his brother can have titles with that sanctioning body. Maybe he decides that, and then everybody else, go do your thing. Everybody knows I'm still the top dog at 154. There's no reason for me to have belts to reinforce that. All right, I want to talk about a fight that's sure not to happen and sure to disappoint us. That would be Tank Davis and Ryan Garcia. We are a couple of weeks removed, Keith, from Ryan Garcia's knockout win over Javier Fortuna. Tremendous performance by Ryan Garcia. Dominated Fortuna from start to finish. Fortuna had been beaten in previous fights before. He had never been beaten up quite like Ryan Garcia did to him in mid-July. And afterwards, the attention, unsurprisingly, all focused on Tank Davis. Been some public back and forth. Floyd Mayweather came out and said, we'll do the fight at 135 pounds. Ryan Garcia responded, okay, I'll go back to 135 pounds and take that fight. Oscar De La Hoya is suddenly out there throwing flowers at Floyd Mayweather. He is talking about what a pioneer Floyd Mayweather is. I don't know what that was all about, but he's doing it. There seems to be some rhetoric that is, creating a sliver of optimism that a fight between Ryan Garcia and Tank Davis can get done. What is your level of optimism that we could see Ryan Garcia versus Tank Davis this year?
It's low, Chris. I would like to be more optimistic, to be honest with you, but I do think that I don't doubt at all that Ryan Garcia genuinely wants the fight, although I was a little surprised at his demand for it to be at 140, however temporary that might have been. I was a little surprised by that, but I do
think... Yeah, but Keith, you know what that was, Keith? Like, to me, that was a pretty smart move by Ryan, because he was able to give something up. I think he always knew he was never going to fight Tank at 140. And to say it then, he knew somebody in PBC, or in this case Mayweather, would say, no, 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 we'll do this fight at 135. So he could turn around and say, all right, I'll do what you want. I'll fight it at 135. I don't think he ever really believed that Tank would come up to 140 to face him. I thought that was a pretty strategic move by him after the fight to declare he's a 140-pounder forever.
Maybe you're right, but I don't see the point of doing that. Because you know they were going to say that. So what is it just kind of wasted a couple of days. But whatever the case might be, I mean, he's willing to shrink himself down to 135 or whatever he has to do to get to one. And he is a big kid. I mean, he's 5'10 or whatever. He's a pretty tall kid.
Yeah. Now,
on the flip side, as it relates to that, Chris, they could have, and this is sort of what they were saying, I guess, well, he fought at 140 pounds once already. It's not like you were asking him to make his 140-pound debut, but they do know that Davis is much more comfortable fighting at 135. I'm not going to say he cherry-picked Mario Barrios, because I think that's a little disrespectful to Barrios. I understand he's not an A-level fighter, but he's a B-level fighter, and he was much bigger than Tank, and he gave him a competitive fight for six or seven rounds before Davis knocked him down twice in the eighth and then stopped him in the 11th. But they know he's a 135 pounder. So let's forget it. He's already agreed to fight at 135 pounds. That's not the issue. The issue is, and understandably so from both sides, Showtime, to my understanding, and I know you've spoken to Steven Espinosa about this as well, they're not going to do a joint pay-per-view with DAZN. I don't see that happening. I mean, there have been some discussions internally about them, if it's worth a second fight, DAZN gets the second fight, figuring something out along those lines. But while Showtime has been invested in Gervonta Davis significantly longer than DAZN has been invested in Ryan Garcia, DAZN has invested millions of dollars in Ryan Garcia's career. So they're not now going to say, well, okay, you guys take the fight and we'll just sit on the sidelines and wait it out. Now, from Showtime's perspective, hey, you guys said we're going out of boxing, you're going to drive us out of boxing, and you were never going to do pay-per-view fights. And now, only in the last few months, you want to do joint pay-per-view events and pay-per-view events when you had been screaming death to pay-per-view for 4 years, et cetera. I understand that is going to infuriate boxing fans because they could not care less about the corporate politics and all the other things that go into the egos and all the things that go into making these fights, right? They don't care about any of that. They say, hey, look, I paid my $100 for my DAZN subscription, whatever it is, $120 for my DAZN subscription for the year. I pay my X amount for Showtime, depending on how you get it bundled and everything for every month. I'll pay the extra money. I really want to see Ryan Garcia and Tank Davis, two of the most, polarizing and popular guys in the entire sport. It's one of the biggest, I don't even care if it's a title fight. It's not a real title fight any way you look at it, because Gervonta Davis has a secondary 135-pound championship. Ryan Garcia has already said, who cares about the belts? And to some degree, especially in this case, he's 1,000% correct. Just put them in the ring. Fans want to see the fight. They're excited about this. They're salivating about this. Gervonta Davis's fans. Ryan Garcia will get knocked cold by Gervonta Davis. Ryan Garcia's fans, from 9-year-old girls and up, he's going to knock Gervonta Davis out, right? I mean, this is a fight that has really captivated not only the imaginations of boxing fans, the interest of boxing fans, but people outside of our normal realm of boxing. The fight should happen, right? If people want to see it, there's a lot of money involved. What did Floyd Mayweather say when he went on Fight Hype last week? He goes, we're not damn fools. There's a lot of money involved in this, and we're going to, work our best to do it. Now, whether that actually happens or not, I'm not blaming this on Floyd Mayweather. I'm just saying, I don't think that the fight is going to happen next. Hopefully it happens eventually. But I think this issue with Showtime and DAZN, and the competing promoters and et cetera, I think this is going to prevent the fight from happening next. And again, that is going to be very disappointing and very aggravating for the people who follow this sport on a daily basis.
Yeah, I'm less concerned about the promoters because, look, Golden Boy, they believe Ryan Garcia can win. Al Haymon, from what I've been told by people that know him, believes that Tank Davis can win and will win, and that's why it's a fight that he'd be willing to do a cross promotion with to get this fight over the line. I completely agree with you on the network stuff. To me, this comes down to will Showtime get on board with this? And I completely understand where Steven Espinosa and Showtime are coming from. DAZN came into the game in 2018 trying to put everyone out of business, trying to kill pay-per-view, trying to sign away all these PBC and by extension Showtime fighters. Basically not looking to play nice, but use their checkbook to take over boxing. It didn't work. And, nobody can really ever take over boxing. Al Haymon's tried at one point. That didn't work. DAZN, Eddie Hearn, Matchroom tried. That didn't work. So I get the frustration that Showtime has and the bitterness that Showtime justifiably has towards DAZN and their business model. That being said, there's so much money in it. Like, I heard Eddie Hearn, who has nothing to do with this fight, say recently that he thought Garcia Tank could be a fight that generates north of 600,000 pay-per-view buys. I can see that. Like, I really can. The two fan bases, a lot of buzz for that fight if it's made like in December. I can see that. the live gate. You know, we saw Gervonta just do one north of $4 million at Barclays Center. Ryan Garcia had 10,000 plus paying fans in LA. They do a huge number, maybe north of $10 million for that live gate. Maybe there's a site fee in Vegas that puts up more money in everybody's pockets. There's just so much money in this. And this is what I've asked Stephen Espinoza on this podcast and elsewhere. Like, what is the threshold to make you kind of, all right, you know what? Fuck it. We'll do it. We'll get involved. Like, what is the number? Because even if it is a co-promotion, co-broadcast, Showtime might make more money off that than they would a regular Gervonta Davis fight. Because as I look around, Keith, I don't know about you, but I don't know where Gervonta turns if he wants to fight before the end of the year. Ryan Garcia, you know, Jojo Diaz is out there. It's a decent in-house fight you can make if you're Golden Boy. I can see that fight being put together. I don't love it, but I can see it. I don't know what Gervonta's options are. I know they play things close to the vest with PBC. Maybe he'll stun us all and move up to welterweight to fight Keith Thurman. I don't know. But like, between 130 and 140, there aren't great options for Gervonta Davis. Certainly not ones that are marketable, that drive pay-per-views, that generate the kind of interest, even a fraction of the interest, that a fight with Ryan Garcia would. So those are the two things that I think, you know, have to be resolved. Showtime's understandable bitterness towards DAZN and its business model, and PBC looking around going, we're kind of out of guys here. Like, can we bring Gary Russell up and have him fight? Well, that's another small guy that Gervonta would be fighting, and he's coming off a loss. Is there somebody else? I don't know who the guy is for Gervonta to fight next.
That's a great question, Chris, because they've been patient, maybe to an aggravating degree as it relates to matching Gervonta Davis sometimes. But look, when Rolando Romero fell out, they replaced him with Esau Cruz, who was fighting on the, you know, we went through all that last year. He was on the undercard and everything. Esau Cruz gave him the toughest fight of his career. Right. So maybe he falls into an opponent who gives him a tougher fight than they were expecting. But I don't, you make a good point in that there's no obvious person for him to be, because of course, George Kambosos and Devin Haney, which also would require them to work with another promoter and another network and all that, the winner of that fight won't be available when Gervonta Davis is going to fight toward the end of the year if he wanted to try to become the fully unified lightweight champion. The schedules don't align for that to happen, so there's nothing really obvious for him in his next fight besides Ryan Garcia. And as it relates to what you said about the Showtime DAZN thing, Chris, it's like, you know, it's not personal. It is personal to some extent, but it's not personal. It's business, because this is all strategic business. I mean, DAZN is a competitor for Showtime. They don't want to do a joint pay-per-view with them necessarily to, in effect, teach them how to do pay-per-views, because they don't have a lot of experience. They've only done one, right? So they don't have a lot of experience in it. And it takes some trial and error to get it right and everything. So there are a lot of strategic reasons for them not to want to do it, besides the ego part of it, or the personal feelings that they may have toward each other, because, you know, there were a lot of things said and everything. And you know, sometimes it's not easy to just dismiss that. Okay, well, last year you said you were putting us out of business and pay-per-view, you know, death to pay-per-view, and everyone else is doing it wrong, and we know how to do it better than everybody else. And, oh, well, now let's work together. I mean, let's forget all that. So that is a real thing and a real issue for them to work through. But it's also a strategic thing from a business standpoint, because if you're trying to keep a leg up on the competition, you don't want to help them in any way either. Now, again, boxing fans don't want to hear that. That's not why they tune in every Saturday or every other Saturday night or whenever the fights are on. That's not why they do it. They want to see the best fights possible, no matter which network it's on, which promoters are involved. They don't care about any of that. But unfortunately, that is the boxing business. And look, hardcore boxing fans to some extent are used to all of this, and this is not news to them. But there is a point where, like, people just get tired of it, and that's why the boxing audience, it's not just network issues. It's a lot of other things, having too many champions and having boxing not be on free television and readily available as it once was. There's a million reasons why boxing is now forever a niche sport, but you can't keep having that audience dwindle for whatever the reasons might be, because that, you know, eventually there's just not going to be enough boxing fans to make the fight, to make the sport sustainable at the level where networks are investing money to the degree that they are now.
I know it's funny. I've been following this LIV Golf Tour and how, you know, golfers are saying they're joining LIV to grow the game. LIV Golf and what's happening with golf, eerily reminiscent of boxing. You know, when you have a new player on the game with lots of money, it waters down each side of it. Like, just from a pure golf perspective, it ain't growing the game. That's for sure.
And also you have the political element to that, which makes it very different too. I mean, you know, it's a...
But like, just from a sport, just from a sports perspective, like, it's not growing the game. It's fragmenting.
No, it's about money. It's about money, right? It's about most other, like, everything else in life, Chris, right? What it all boils down to ultimately, although people might not come out and say it, is money. I mean, the LIV Golf Tournament is a perfect example of that. Guys are being paid enormous sums of money. They don't care about the morality of it or anything like that. Yeah, you're going to pay me $200 million or whatever. I mean, oh, great. You know, they'll do whatever.
Yeah. Money, as it always does, often talks. So I want to talk about kind of a little tug of war going on over at DAZN right now involving Dimitri Bivol. Bivol is the WBA light heavyweight champion. He is not going to fight Canelo Alvarez in a rematch this year because Canelo is going to fight Gennady Golovkin in September. Because of that, Bivol has to find or wants to find an opponent before the end of the year. Golden Boy has Zerto Ramirez, who is the mandatory challenger for Bivol's WBA light heavyweight title. The WBA has come out and ordered negotiations between Golden Boy or Bivol's team and Zerto's team for that fight to happen. On the other side of the pond, you've got Matchroom, which works closely with Bivol, which would like to pair Bivol against Joshua Buatsi before the end of the year. Buatsi, also a rising contender at 175, high in the rankings for the WBA, though not the mandatory challenger the way Zerto is. This is quite kind of an interesting inside baseball game going on right now, Keith. What do you make of the tug of war for Dimitri Bivol?
You know, I can see it from both sides, right? I mean, obviously, if you're Gilberto Ramirez and Golden Boy Promotions, well, he's the mandatory challenger, so he should fight Dimitri Bivol next. No questions asked. I would say that Gilberto Ramirez has not exactly fought a who's who of light heavyweights to ascend to the mandatory position, so I could see that argument as well. But he is the mandatory challenger, and he's a former...
Hey, Keith, whoever put Dominic Bozal at number one...
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, look
who
he's...
Do you watch boxing? My bigger problem is, like, who are you... Who put him at number one?
You can say that about the rankings in almost every division, right, Chris?
I guess, but that was pretty bad.
The WBA in particular, I mean, has some baffling rankings. But, you know, I thought he struggled a little bit with Yonesky Gonzalez in his previous fight. But he is the mandatory challenger. That's indisputable. He's undefeated. So he has a legitimate argument to fight Bivol next, right? From a business perspective, if I'm Bivol, well, I think I'll probably make more money for fighting Joshua Buatsi at O2 Arena in London, because boxing is so popular there. I understand Ramirez is a bit of a draw. He's not an enormous star by any stretch of the imagination, and boxing obviously is much more popular in the UK than it is in the US. So Bivol probably, if I had to guess, would make more money for fighting Buatsi in the UK than he would make for fighting Ramirez in the US. And if you're him, now he's maybe not going to decide this entirely, but if you're him and you're not really getting to capitalize on the biggest win of your career because Canelo moved forward with the Golovkin fight, I would want to fight Buatsi. I'm not saying it's an easier fight or a harder fight or whatever, but from a business perspective, it might make more sense for him to do that. But Gilberto Ramirez is the mandatory challenger and wants his title shot. So it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. But I would think Bivol would want to honestly, Buatsi has not fought a high level of opposition either. I understand he beat Craig Richards in his last fight. Craig Richards obviously gave Bivol a difficult fight, a more difficult fight than people were expecting. But, you know, he hasn't fought an elite list of light heavyweights either. But one of them is going to get the shot, right? So if it were up to me and I was an arbitrator, I would say that Gilberto Ramirez should fight him next because he's the mandatory challenger, get the mandatory defense out of the way. But Eddie Hearn seems to have more pull within DAZN than Golden Boy does, or doesn't seem to. He does. So we'll see which way DAZN wants to go with this as well.
Yeah, I also think, and I'm curious to see how much teeth the WBA has here. Like, how firmly do they hold this position that Bivol fights Zerto, or presumably he'd have to vacate the title? You know, I know Eddie Hearn and Matchroom have or are going to apply for an exemption for Bivol to fight. Yeah, I've asked a few people. I don't know how that's going to work. Like, I think now the fight's been ordered, I don't know that applying for the exemption is going to work at this stage of the process. Will the WBA, which, you know, operates the beat of its own drummer sometimes, will they enforce the mandatory? Because then Bivol has to do it, right? Like, I mean, I guess he could vacate his title and go and fight Joshua Buatsi and maybe beat Buatsi, collect a check, and then be still undefeated when he faces Canelo. And he could maybe think that Canelo only wants to fight him for revenge, although I think Canelo also wants that 175-pound belt as well. You can also argue that Buatsi maybe wouldn't want to fight Bivol if he doesn't have a title. Buatsi's wanted that title shot for a long time. I think the WBA controls all this, because the WBA says, look, cut a deal or we're going to purse bid. To me, that's the ball game. The other variable in this, Keith, and you mentioned, what does DAZN want? Like, I think that Bivol, I think Bivol would be a favorite against either Zerto or Buatsi. I think Zerto's a tougher fight, maybe, because Zerto's so big. Like, he rehydrates like over 200 pounds when he gets in the ring with guys. So that's a tough fight, but I would favor Bivol in that fight as well. And at least in the U.S., there'd be more eyeballs on it than there would be a Buatsi fight. And if you're building towards a Canelo rematch, don't you want as many eyeballs on Bivol as possible? Like, not to say that Bivol Zerto is a guaranteed classic and people are going to be talking about it, but there will be some pre-fight buzz to Bivol versus Zerto. It'll probably happen in LA or Anaheim or one of these areas that Zerto sells some tickets. He did a pretty decent crowd against Dominic Bozal. I was surprised how many people were there for that fight. So he'd probably do a very good crowd for a Bivol fight in that region of the country. Don't you want as many North American, American eyeballs on Bivol as possible? Because if Bivol goes out, performs incredibly well against Zerto, beats him, maybe knocks him out, whatever, that's only going to increase the interest in a third, or in a rematch with Canelo next year. Whereas if you fight Buatsi, some people will watch in the U.S., lots of people watch in the U.K., but some people watch in the U.S., but it's not as marketable in the U.S. as a fight against Zerto would be. Honestly, I think when you're talking business, it makes better business sense to do Bivol against Zerto than it does Bivol against Buatsi.
You know, I could see it on the flip side as well, Chris, in that they're trying, DAZN is trying to grow its business in the U.K., and obviously that's a bigger fight in the U.K. than Zerto and Bivol. As it relates to Canelo fighting Bivol next, assuming he beats Triple G in September, I don't know that it matters. In my opinion, I don't know that it matters all that much which one he fights, as long as he just wins the fight. You know, because I think people are going to be just as interested in him fighting Canelo, whether he were to beat Bivol in between. I mean, whether he would beat Buatsi in between, or whether he would beat Zerto in between. I don't know that it matters all that much. I think they're kind of comparable in the level of challenge that they would present for Bivol. Maybe Zerto's a little tough for fight because, as you said, he's bigger and he's a southpaw and everything. But so maybe it's a little tougher fight. But again, from a business standpoint, as I mentioned earlier, I think it does pretty big business in the UK, and they are trying to grow the DAZN brand out there. But counting on the WBA to do the right thing, I mean, what are we talking about, right? I mean, you know, it's like, as long as wherever the WBA can get the largest sanctioning fee and walk away from it with the most money, I think is what they would do. But how do you declare someone the mandatory and then say that it doesn't need to be enforced? Now, they do a lot of crazy things that don't make any sense to normal people, so that I guess it's possible that they won't do that, but it's what they should do. Just get Zerto's title shot, and I think Bivol beats him, and then hopefully we see the Canelo rematch, I guess. I mean, because assuming Canelo beats Triple G in the third fight, where else does Canelo go besides that? If Bivol's undefeated, so has the WBA title. One thing I don't think he would do, Chris, as you mentioned earlier, I don't think under any circumstances Dmitry Bivol gives up his title, because that's all of his leverage, really. And like you said, Canelo will want to avenge his loss, but it would also mean more to him if he still has the WBA light heavyweight title. And then let's say he beats either Zerto or Buatsi and then goes and beats Canelo again. Well, he would need his WBA title to get the fight that he ultimately wants, although it is worth less money than the Canelo rematch. He wants to become the fully unified 175-pound champion. And without the belt, obviously he can't do that. And now he wants to go fight, better Bev to do that. That ultimately he would need the belt. So I don't see him giving up the title, because it's just giving away too much leverage for him.
So it all comes down to the WBA. And will they follow their rules? Or will they come up with a wackadoo excuse not to?
Well, Gary Shaw, New Jersey's own Gary Shaw, is on the case.
Cleaning it up out there with the WBA. All right, last thing for you. We are nearing the end of July. And while we seem to have a penciled-in date for Terrence Crawford against Errol Spence, we've read reports that they're closing in on a deal. You've talked to people that have probably said they're getting there. I've talked to people that have said they're getting there. But here we are, headed into August, and still no deal between Spence and Crawford. I'm not at the red alert stage, Keith, on this fight not happening. But if we get through August, that might raise the alert level significantly. What do you make of where we are with Spence and Crawford?
Honestly, I think we still have about a month or so of wiggle room to the point where you would get concerned about it, right? Because we're not in a world anymore where they're doing 5-city press tours and all that kind of stuff. So look, if the deal comes together finally after months and months of negotiations, they'll announce the fight and they'll maybe do one press conference somewhere, wherever that might be. They don't need to go to New York, LA, wherever the fight is. Those days are over. So let's forget about all that, right? But they do need 8-9 weeks apiece to train. So if the fight is going to be in November, as we suspect, there are a couple of dates in November that are being thrown around. They would need to go into training camp in the beginning to the middle of September. We're still a ways away from that yet. So the issues that they're still ironing out, and look, there's a lot of money at stake here. There's a lot of egos at play here. And Terrence Crawford wants to squeeze as much as he can out of this. And he's going into it with not the most leverage that you could have, because look, Spence, as we know, he wants to fight Terrence Crawford. Terrence Crawford wants to fight Spence. Both guys clearly want the fight, no problem, but they want to be paid at a certain level. And Crawford is, I'm not saying he's in a position of weakness, but PBC is going to favor, to make this fight, they're going to favor Errol Spence, right? Because Errol Spence has been a PBC fighter, an Al Haymon guy, his entire career. And Terrence Crawford was fighting across the street, or whatever, you know, whatever we've termed it over the last few years. And he's not a PBC guy. So there are some concessions that he's going to probably have to make, I guess, as long as he gets the type of money he's looking for. Maybe he'll overlook those things. But he's not a PBC guy, right? But he wants to make the fight. And the reason I say he's not really operating from a position of strength is because what is he going to do? He's going to be 35 years old in September. He really wants this fight now. He's finally in a position where he's not under contract with Top Rank. He can go make this fight if he wants to make it. And what is he going to do if he doesn't fight Errol Spence next, right? Because he doesn't have a promotional contract. Could he fight Virgil Ortiz? Sure. But why would he do that? He would make a lot less. There is some risk in, but I think Terrence Crawford beats Virgil Ortiz, even though he's a young, powerful puncher. I think Terrence Crawford at this point, still on the verge of being 35 years old, still beats Virgil Ortiz. But there's not a ton of money in that fight. Certainly not as much money as there is in an Errol Spence Jr. fight. So, there is some risk involved, some significant risk. There's not nearly as much reward. And then what else is he going to do besides fight Errol Spence if he doesn't fight Virgil Ortiz, right? Oh, he could move up to 154 pounds. Well, the fully unified 154-pound champion who has all four titles fights for PBC. So that's not an option either. You're in the same position. without really having the fight that you actually wanted. So he's in a position, you know, again, not a position of weakness, but not in the strongest position either. So if he's going to have to make some concessions, I think, to make the fight. So supposedly he's willing to do that. And look, Chris, this fight is such a high level fight that it's being played close to the vest. Yes, some information is trickling out, but they're playing pretty much everything close to the vest. They're not leaking out details. That this is not a public negotiation by any stretch. What I keep being told is, hey, they're making some progress, you know, some, you know, this, some that, you know, you get vague answers. For the most part, I'm getting vague answers, right? Because they don't, you know, and that's generally how the biggest of deals get done, right? They're not out there talking about every, you know, you might get some information here and there, but not specifics, right? So they're at a point where they still have some time to make the fight. I think both guys want it. You know, interestingly, Chris, I was in San Antonio a few weeks ago. Errol Spence promotes Frank Martin. Frank Martin fought in the Showtime opener that day or that night. And I talked to Errol after the fight, and he said, look, you know, I don't really want to take the spotlight off of Frank Martin. I'm here to promote him. So I don't want to talk about it really on the record. I said, well, you know, the fight, you know, I like joking with him. I says, the fight happening or not? He goes, the fight's happening. He goes, you know, the date's in flux a little bit. We'll see which date it actually is. But I'm confident the fight's going to happen. That's exactly, now that was 3 weeks ago, and we're still no closer probably to the fight being done. But that's what he said. That's what Errol Spence said. I haven't spoken to Crawford about it, but from what I've been led to believe, he's eager to make the fight as well. So we'll just have to keep our fingers crossed. And one, I just wanted to mention something, Chris, before I forget about it. Mm-hmm. Spence Crawford is a big fight, right? And it's a meaningful fight because it's two undefeated welterweight champions. It's for the, you know, full unification in the welterweight division. Guys who, you know, this is, it's not at the Pacquiao Mayweather level because one, because they're not as big as stars, and two, because it hasn't been going on quite as long, but it has been going on for a few years. People really want to see this fight, right? I mean, you could argue it's the second biggest fight that can be made in boxing behind Joshua, if Joshua were to win, if Joshua fought Fury or something like that. But I do think, in relation to what you said earlier, I think that the Gervonta Davis, Ryan Garcia, even in the age of piracy, and with young people being very savvy about stealing signals and such, I still think that Gervonta Davis, Ryan Garcia probably does more pay-per-view buys than Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford.
It's crazy, but I think you're right. Yeah. Not a huge amount more, but I think they do a little bit more.
Yep.
I agree with you. Yeah. And let me tell you one other thing about that. My antenna went up when I saw this. WBC ranked Keith Thurman as the number one guy at 147, putting aside the absurdity of that.
You don't say, Chris.
Like, the absurdity. Keith Thurman has fought one time in 3 years. One time. And that was one win over Mario Barrios. He's ranked ahead of Virgil Ortiz, Boots Ennis, even Conor Benn, David Avanesian, guys like that. Now, why would the WBC do that? To put my Brian Windhorst hat on. Why would they do that? Why would they rank him at number one? The only thing that only answer I had to that, Keith, was perhaps it put Thurman in a position where he becomes the mandatory for Spence and they order that fight to happen. Because Thurman, Spence, you can sell that as a pay-per-view. They've had a lot of back and forth. Thurman wouldn't give Spence an opportunity years ago. Spence didn't want to give Thurman an opportunity after the Pacquiao fight. There's bad blood there. I thought that was interesting. I don't know if that piqued your antenna at all, but I thought that was really interesting. The WBC ranked him number one.
Unlike Wendy's conspiracy theory from a few weeks ago, because I'm not really sure what he was saying, I think you're exactly right. I think that is why he's the mandatory now for Errol Spence. That's a fight that they could make. People will be very disappointed if we wind up seeing Errol Spence Jr. against Keith Thurman, a fight that people wanted to see 4 or 5 years ago, maybe, or 3 years ago, before he lost to Pacquiao, for sure. People will be very disappointed if that's the fight, but it is a marketable fight and it is a pay-per-view fight, right? I mean, it's not a Crawford Spence level pay-per-view fight, but it is a pay-per-view fight. And it is not a coincidence that Keith Thurman is now the mandatory challenger for one of Errol Spence Jr.'s titles when they're having some back and forth in the negotiations, I would say is the best way to phrase it, right? So now they have a backup plan. And honestly, I think he would have fought Thurman anyway, even if he wasn't, you know, I think that's the backup plan, even if he weren't the mandatory challenger. I think he was going to fight. That's who he would fight. But I mean, imagine after all of this, after you're trudging along here and you think we're finally getting to Spence Crawford, it's like Lucy with the football, right? I mean, now we're going to get Spence Thurman. I hope that doesn't happen. And if the fight doesn't happen in November or December, you know, whenever it might wind up happening, I think we just have to give up hope of it happening. Yeah. Because there's literally no reason why the fight can't happen now. They each might have to make concessions financially to make it happen, because what they think the fight is worth in terms of guarantees is probably not reality, right? They're going to have to bet on themselves a little bit, maybe more so than they want to, right? On the pay-per-view buys and all that, which kind of sucks, to be honest with you, in the age of piracy, because Chris, I know you and I have discussed it before, but you know, it's a real problem, you know, and you know, people, I don't want to play the morality police here necessarily, but you are stealing money from the fighters and their families every time you steal a pay-per-view. Now, people who do it will say, well, screw them, I'm not paying $75. Well, I don't know if that's the way to look at it either, but that is the way some people look at it. So I see them wanting to get as high a guarantee as they possibly can, because if you're leaving hundreds of thousands of pay-per-view buys on the table because people are stealing it and the industry itself has not figured out a way to prevent that from happening, well, you try to get the most money you can, both guys, as opposed to saying, well, bet on yourself and take more of an upside percentage to try to get what you want.
It piracy is a massive problem when it comes to pay-per-view. I mean, I talk to people around Jake Paul all the time, people that put on Jake Paul fights. The thing I hear often is that his live gates are real, like Cleveland, Tampa, probably New York. He sells tickets in these places. The pay-per-view numbers are not great, and that's largely due to the fact that Jake Paul's fans are among the most internet sophisticated out there. Like, they're going to find a way to steal a signal. They are YouTube fans. So
yeah,
it's a problem, and I don't know what the solution is. My last point to just jump up and down on a sanctioning body again is, like, Mauricio Sulaiman, WBC, this is why people don't respect you, because you have no business putting Keith Thurman as your number one contender. I know he was the WBC champion years and years ago, but since then he has been inactive. Meanwhile, all the guys underneath you have been fighting good, tough fights. Virgil Ortiz, number one contender of the WBO, fighting good, progressively tougher fights. Conor Benn, shouldn't be at the top yet, but he's fighting. These guys are fighting. They're fighting. And Keith Thurman's out there not fighting and talking about how he's not sure when he's going to get a fight at this point. This is why Mauricio and the WBC and all you sanctioning bodies that hate the criticism, that hear the noise and are so upset by it, this is why. Keith Thurman doesn't belong as number one contender. Simple as that. Good fighter, belongs in a big fight, does not belong as number one contender.
Biggest thing, Chris, is, and all your arguments are obviously beyond valid as it relates to Keith Thurman being the number one contender in the WBC. If they would have done it in their rankings right after he beat Mario Barrios, okay, you might not have agreed with it, but it is what it is. He just beat Barrios, who's a former secondary champion, had only lost to Gervonta Davis. Okay, fine, right? But why 4 months later? What has he done in the 4 months since that happened? There are 5 months since that happened that would necessitate you moving him into the number one spot other than what we already discussed.
Unbelievable. But we could spend podcast after podcast talking about the issues with sanctioning bodies. Keith, good to talk to you, man. I will not be... I know you're getting used to, I know you're getting used to seeing me next to you ringside at some of these fights. I've been active in coming to some of non-DAZN fights. I'm an active reporter.
It was almost for a couple of months. It was almost like Chris Mannix covered boxing. I don't know what happened, but you know, that's the way it seemed for a couple of months.
But we
might not even be on a perch on because I don't know how many $1,000 ringside tickets are selling for this fight. So it might actually be a little closer.
Would have been better. Would have been better to be right back in the cozy confines of ringside. Keith, enjoy the weekend, man. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Chris. Sounds good, buddy. Take care.
When we come back, my conversation with Danny Garcia. Fight fans, come out swinging with a no-sweat first bet on FanDuel Sportsbook. Right now, new customers get up to $1,000 in free bets if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code BOXING. Bet on who will win, knockouts, when the fight will end, and so much more. So if you haven't tried FanDuel, now is the perfect time to give it a shot. Just join now with the promo code BOXING to get a no-sweat first bet. That's up to $1,000 back in free bets if your first bet doesn't win. Exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Danny Garcia is a two-division world champion. On Saturday, he will look to begin his campaign towards a third division title when he takes on Jose Benavidez Jr. That's a fight you can see live on Showtime, and Danny joins me here on the show. Danny, this will be your first fight since December of 2020. So I guess my first question is, where you been, man? What have you been doing?
Just let my body recover. Let my body recover. You know, 2020 was a crazy year for everyone. So, and I fought two times. I think I'm the only top elite, one elite fighters that fought two times in 2020, you know, before the pandemic and during the pandemic. So I felt like the 2020, I put a lot of hard work in mentally and physically in and out of the ring. And I felt like after the Spence fight, I just needed a break. And, It doesn't even feel like it was that long ago, to be honest. I don't know why. Probably because I had so much fun. Like, in between, time went by fast, and it's crazy. A couple of days away, and I'm fighting again. So, you know, I think it all worked out good for me.
Yeah, I mean, was it just the year of 2020, or was it just that? I mean, you've been in boxing for a long time now. You fought some big fights at 140. You fought some big fights at 147. Did you just need a break from all that?
Definitely, it was definitely a buildup. Like, it was just like a buildup over the years, you know, constant pressure, mental, physical, just fighting the best, wanting to be the best, and ups and downs. Everything about boxing is just, I just felt like I just needed a break. You know, I knew that I needed a break, and it was no better time to take a break after that fight, and all those fights, actually, like you said.
So after spending so much time in training camps as a boxer, I know you're a businessman. I've been down to that Philadelphia area where you have a lot of your businesses. What did you do with your time? Like, how much, what kind of things did you go get into?
Oh, I did a lot of good things with my time. I bought real estate. I bought some real estate in Miami. I helped my sisters with their career, their music career. You know, I helped a lot of my friends and my family. Give a lot of young kids in a boxing gym advice. I've done a lot, you know, be a dad. That's a 24/7 job. just trying to keep myself busy and just tapping into everything, but at the same time still remember that I'm a fighter. Jogging here and there, you know, working out, going to the gym still, and just missing the smell of the gym.
So when did you get that itch to come back?
I would say top of the year. In January, I just started to feel like I don't want to waste the last years I have left in my career. So I didn't want to just sit down and waste 2 or 3 years of my career. And by the time I come back, I'm 36, 37 years old, and I wasted 3 good years of my career where I felt like I could have made a good statement. And I've been feeling good. I've been feeling great. And honestly, it doesn't even feel like I left. When I first started sparring, I was a little bit, this feels different. But after a while, when it just kicked back in, and it just felt like I never left.
So you are coming back, and you're coming back at 154 pounds. Take me through the decision to move up to junior middleweight.
Yeah, definitely. Everything was strategic. Like I said before, I won the title at 140. I won the title at 147. And I knew once I took that break, I was going to let my body get bigger, and I was going to come refreshed mentally and physically, and I knew I was going to come back at 154. That's another reason why I took the break, because I wanted my body to get bigger, gain more weight, so that way I could build more muscle.
You know, your run at 147, by my count, there were 9 fights as a full-fledged welterweight. You went 6-3. You won a title. 2 of your 3 losses were razor-close decisions to Keith Thurman and Sean Porter. When you look back at your run at welterweight, how do you view that experience?
It was definitely a great, great experience. I fought a lot of tough guys in that division, And that's a very talented division where everybody's styles are different. So I would have wished like they gave me one of those decisions, because I felt like, you know, out of the Thurman and Porter fight, I knew it was a close fight, and I just felt like I should have got those decisions, and I would have been a lot more happier about my run at 147. But at the same time, I did fight the best fighters, and I gave the fans a great fight, and, you know, we learned from our mistakes. But I would say it was just it was a great learning experience, and I really don't regret nothing, because, you know, the Durans, the Leonards, the Oscar De La Hoyas, they all lost, you know, to top welterweights, and they came back and finished their career strong at 154, like I'm trying to do.
I mean, you're preaching the choir here, Danny, with losses. That don't mean anything. If you fight the best, that's going to happen sometimes. You come out on the wrong end of decisions. But you mentioned the Thurman and the Porter losses. Which one bothers you the most?
I'm not going to lie. The Thurman one hurt bad because it was my first loss. Mm-hmm. And I was at the Barclays Center. I felt like, yo, this fight is close. They got to give it to me. This is my home. So, but I kind of let that one slip away for whatever reason. But I feel like the Porter fight hurt me more, because I know I have better skills than him. I know I'm a better boxer than him. He's just awkward. I just knew everything. I did everything better than him. And I knew he was going to throw more, but I thought the judges were going to just count clean, effective shots. I didn't know they were just going to count punches, because that's not how you score a fight. Mm-hmm. So I would say that the Porter one hurt me more, because it was my second loss, and I knew I was better than him, and that one hurt bad, but what can I do?
You were a big puncher at 140 pounds, not quite as big, at least when it came to knockout percentage at 147. Now you're at 154. How do you think your power is going to be utilized, will hold up at 154?
That's a good question. I felt strong at 147 too. I felt real strong. You know, I had some good knockouts in that, you know, knocked out Granados, knocked out Rios, knocked out a few other guys. So I had my moments with the power, with that, especially with the one punch knockout power 147. You know, it was a little hard to knock out top guys. You know, they come ready just like you. I wish I would have got a knockout one of those, just like I knocked out Amir Khan, but It didn't happen. But at 154, I feel good. I feel my strength in a different way. I really can't explain it. Like, I'm hitting guys and I'm hurting them, but I'm also like absorbing punches better, like physically stronger. And that's one thing I felt like my last, like when I sparred 12 rounds, a few days ago, when I got out the ring, I checked my weight and I was 161 pounds, but I just felt so much bigger. I felt so much stronger. And I think that's one of the ways my strength is going to show in the fight, is body strength.
I assume as you've been preparing for this fight, you've been sparring with some naturally bigger guys. How you felt in there with bigger people?
I felt faster. I felt smarter. They did feel a little bit bigger in the clinch. Like when I go to hold or grab them, they felt a lot stronger. Like, so I had to kind of push, like put my legs under me to push them back. But that was kind of like the only, difference I felt. The power, those guys, guys hit hard in any weight class. Like Matisse was 140, but he hit like a middleweight. Mm. And then you got like Thurman, who hits hard, and Spence was strong. So I think the power kind of felt the same. So, but other than that, they're bigger guys, so they feel more heavier.
Do you approach this fight thinking, look, one way or the other, I'm a full-time 154? Or could you see any scenario where if you don't feel as comfortable as you hoped, you might actually drop back to 147?
Yeah, I can definitely still make 147. That's not a question. But I really want to fulfill my dream. I want to fulfill my dream and try to be a three-division world champion. And if I get it, I'm so happy. I know I can do it. I just have to put my mind to it and really believe in myself. For me to take a step back to 147, I fought the best fighters, and then I won a world title there. So I kind of feel like I'm taking a step back, and there's a lot of new young guys that I'm excited to see them guys do their thing, like Jaron Ennis, which I think he will take over the welterweight division. So I'll leave that up to those guys and see what they can do with that division.
So you use the word dream. Is there a dream fight for you at 154?
I just need to get this win. I got to show the people. I really do. Like, a lot of people have been asking me, who you want to fight? Who you want to do this? Of course I want to fight the best. And I proved to the world that I always want to fight the best. And to me, you know, Benavidez is a tough challenge, so I can't look over him. I know he's hungry. He has something to prove. So I got to get this victory. And then after that, then, you know, the sky's the limit. The sky's the limit.
Yeah, there's, you know, when I talk to people around PBC, there's obviously a lot of chatter about you against Jermell Charlo at some point next year. Do you feel like you need multiple fights at 154 to be ready for that type of challenge? Or if things go your way in the Benavidez fight, would that be something you'd be ready to step into next?
One thing I learned about boxing, sometimes those warm-up fights can really hurt you then. Because you have to train as hard as you train for a warm-up fight. It's the same for a big fight. So sometimes warm-up fights, not so-called warm-up, but not big names. I want to say warm-up because everyone comes to fight.
Sure.
They take the same amount of work. And especially at my age, I don't want to work so hard and waste it on, you know, just the... So I'm just going to go for, I mean, everything I got left, I'm just going to go for, going for the gusto.
You know, I read somewhere that Benavidez's father was basically saying it's do or die for his son in this one, that he's got to win this fight or else, you know, his future as a top fighter is going to be over with. When a fighter may be coming into the ring with that kind of attitude or desperation, what do you make of that? Is that a variable for you as you prepare for this fight?
You know, I feel the same way. I feel the same way. I feel like I have to win because they'll be devastating any other outcome. So I got to win, but I just got to stay smart. You know, I got to stay smart. Let him make the mistakes. And I just adjust like a true vet and get the job done.
Well, Danny, you always fight the best, always have. 140, 147. Looking forward to seeing you back in against the top guys at 154. First up, Jose Benavidez Jr. It's a fight you can see over on Showtime. Danny, good to talk to you again, man. Good luck on Saturday.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
When we come back, this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. You'll know when you get it. It'll say eBay, authenticity, guarantee. You'll feel it because when it comes to your feet, eBay has your back. Maybe it's that head-turning pair for hooping or a hot new collab. Whatever you're after, when you cop on eBay, you can trust that your kicks will be checked by experts. Not just any expert. Sneaker experts who live and breathe the culture. Real people with real hands-on authentication experience. That's when blue checkmark represents on our listing. eBay Authenticity Guarantee, meaning every inch, stitch, sole, logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. So when you finally step into those grill kicks, you'll realize the feeling is unlike any other. And with eBay Authenticity Guarantee, the feeling of real is always within reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be
That's
my
game.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Time now for this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel, and I hope you have been gambling with me lately. I have been on fire with these picks. Fire! Derek Chisora, underdog, wins. Ryan Garcia, you knew he was going to win, told you he was going to win by knockout. Hope you've been betting with me and winning some money. This week, I'm locked in to the 154-pound fight between Danny Garcia and Jose Benavidez Jr. Now, you lean hard towards Garcia in this one, and odds makers have adjusted accordingly. Garcia is a minus 850 favorite to win this fight. I'm taking Danny Garcia. I'm not as confident as so many out there are that he's going to blow through Benavidez Jr. Benavidez Jr. has one loss on his resume. That was to Terrence Crawford, one of the top two or three fighters in the entire world. I think he's going to be game in this fight, but I think Garcia wins. So if you're picking to win, Garcia, you're going to have to load up, though, on just picking him to win. Now, the method of victory, this is where I think you can make a little bit of money. I'm taking Garcia to win by points. He is minus 120 to win by decision, according to FanDuel. Garcia was a power puncher at 140. But when he moved up to 147, his punching power, at least statistically, went down. In four of the nine fights that he fought, four of them by knockout. That was how he had. 6-3 in those nine fights. Four wins coming by way of knockout. It didn't knock any of the top tier guys out that he was up against. So going up to 154, I think Garcia is going to be active enough to win by points. I don't think he's going to get a knockout. So take Danny Garcia to win and take him to win by points. Those are my picks brought to you by FanDuel. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Keith Iadek and Danny Garcia for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. Next week, I will be in Texas for the Virgil Ortiz, Michael McKinson fight. I will be joined by Sergio Mora. Ryan Garcia, what do you have to say to Sergio Mora?
Sergio, you don't know shit.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Explore a wide selection of luxury spirits, wine, and champagne at ReserveBar.com. Elevate your gifting this year with rare and exceptional bourbons, tequilas, scotch, wine, champagne, with personalized engraving, exceptional glassware, and more. From wines to whiskeys, there's a bottle for everyone. For a limited time, save $20 on your order of $150 plus with the code IHEART at ReserveBar.com.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.